We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay. Welcome to Hallowmay. You are listening to Lore Keepers, a world-building podcast. Oh, is B built? No, I don't have my glasses on. Wow, this is great. This is going great already. World-building podcast where we talk about eons of history, heroes and villains, and the legends they leave behind. I'm Frank.
And I'm Carter.
And whether you're interested in stories, looking for inspiration in your own world-building, or perhaps you want a piece of the action, we've got something for you. So this week we're actually continuing. This is a continuation of our sort of climax, our...
It's the wrap-up.
Finale to... Yep, it's the wrap-up. That's a better way of calling it.
It's the epilogue.
Yeah, the epilogue to to Orun. Well, no, I wouldn't call it an epilogue, because I think an epilogue is where typically like things get tied up, and this is less about tying things up and more about them coming together. I'd call that a climax. This is like the big reveals, you know?
I feel like we're tying things up.
we're definitely trying to. We're doing our best on that. But yeah, with that in mind, we have been kind of going through and doing stuff related to Mistborn. Mistborn. That came in my mouth real weird. Whatever. Anyways, look, we'll talk more about that later. Just know that we get into heavy, like, total spoilers for the first Mistborn trilogy. So just, like, don't listen to this episode. First of all, listen to the other episode first if you haven't listened to that one. And second of all, don't listen to this episode if you haven't read Mistborn. And finally, but before we get into all that, Carter, how are you doing?
I am doing well, Frank. It is early morning. Maybe not for you, listener, but it is for us. And I've woken up. I have, you know, walked down my manor to my butler, who then delivered upon me my morning ration of oatmeal with two strawberries.
You live in a manor but are eating oatmeal with strawberries, and you have a butler? Is that where all the money is going? Yes. Is to pay him for the manor and the butler so you don't have any left for food?
Yes.
This is a very interesting character you're building right now.
Yes, and then I walk to my recording studio, and I've sat down, and I'm ready to...
I'm doing okay. I'm a little groggy. I kind of had the spins last night. Now, apparently, having two drinks of alcohol, like two drinks worth of alcohol in one night, is enough to give me the spins, which is just stupid. So I ended up having to, like...
The ferry.
Yeah, the bread... I know, maybe some of that would make me feel better. No, it's just weird because it's like I just had to fall asleep on the couch. I would like distracted myself with my phone long enough for me to fall asleep, because every time I was like turning in bed or whatever. I don't know, do you ever get the spins?
I think
I need to go right now.
Got it. I think one of Frank's cats has destroyed the world, and now we are awaiting whether Frank can put the pieces back together.
Sorry about that.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Did you hear what happened?
I heard a crashing sound.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was... The cat, the little one, Maisie, she was walking along the windowsill and like knocked over a blue planter filled with dirt and knocked it down into one of our nice old fashioned glasses and then it fell down into that. How did you heard it from here? Wow. I mean, I guess I did too, but like you have we've got a mic screen for you.
It was very, very sharp, loud sound.
Yeah. Nothing's broken, thank God. Thank Christ.
The pot and the glass are not broken.
Yeah, they're both fine, because it was a short distance to the counter, and then I think it tipped over from there and fell into the sink. So the old-fashioned glass got knocked onto its side. I was checking for chips and stuff, and I didn't see anything. And the pot just knocked dirt everywhere, so fucking cat. cool. I was far more concerned than that, though, because they have proven that they're able to get into the top half of the hutch now, the one that we put together as of the last recording. And we have stuff up there. We have, like, bottles of liquor and, like, things that definitely could break in the top half of it. And I am kind of wondering maybe we don't put anything that can break up there, because they have shown to, like, knock lamps and shit off of tall places before.
Cats like to knock shit off things.
Like, look, having a bunch of broken glass and liquor all over the floor and a piece of furniture would suck. What would be worse is if that was also in the paws of an animal that you have to take to the emergency vet room, whatever. Like, I don't even want to think about that, man. It's so upsetting.
Well, if it's a spirit, it'll make sure there's no infections in the world.
That is not how that works, man. You need to have alcohol content. Oh, that's a joke. Yes, very funny. God, all right.
I'm assuming that all you drink is just Everclear. So it's just like,
yeah, pretty much.
Basically, isopropyl.
Just a lot of fancy bottles with just Everclear in all of them. I buy really fancy liquors, like, I can't even think of the name of one. And then I just empty them out and pour Everclear into it. So,
yep.
Food coloring, too.
God,
he's so disgusting. No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I was talking about the spins, I guess. Whatever. How are you doing, though?
What's your life look like? Remember my butler and my strawberries?
Okay, so that was all bullshit. Cool. Yeah, but we're doing... Now I have to get my head back into the game. Yeah, no, we're doing a wrap-up on the world of Arun. We are...
The continent of Arun on the world of
Yes,
Sidar,
sorry. Yes,
universe
sorry.
Of
Thank
Halume.
You. So I thought it'd be a good idea to sort of just do an overview of some of the things we talked about last week, because I don't know about you, Carter, but I could use with a little bit of a refresher. I was even editing the podcast this morning, and I think that maybe I just have a little bit of morning brain, you know, just waking up still. But I thought it'd be good to go over just the different things that we talked about.
Yes. In the beginning, Frank, we talked about...
Oh, do you want me to go for it?
No, I got it. I know what it is.
Okay.
It's just the name escapes me. It's the abilities, the
quirks?
The quirks.
Whatever we're calling the quirks?
Yeah, whatever we're calling the quirks, which we haven't decided on.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Still haven't decided on.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so we talked about the quirks and how they were related to the corruption and the fact that you were positing the idea that, which, sorry, I didn't say this before. Again, everyone, if you haven't read Mistborn, leave now. It's okay. Save your listens for later. Go read the books. Seriously. But anyways, quirks.
Yes, we were talking about the relationship between the quirks and the corruption. More explicitly, digging into how it seems like everyone is slightly corrupted, and the strength of your quirk is tied not only to the skill you espouse with it, or just a natural talent, but also through exposure to corruption, which is why one of the reasons why people that are corrupted are very frightening, it's because they have very powerful quirks.
Yeah, and what we were kind of one of the things we were playing with was the idea of I used the word distended, like something that the corruption was doing in the way that it was taking you over when you had gotten affected by it, and we had explored kind of further in the episode how precisely that would happen, is that it the kind of access to power that you'd normally have, you have more than you should be able to have. Like the corruption is almost like, it's like overclocking almost.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah.
And from there, Frank, I think we what did we do? We went to the corruption and discussed, I think, the forgetting.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the forgetting. We talked about, oh, sorry, go ahead.
We had a small aside about the Ash Curse, not the Ash Curse, but the very beginning of the Ash Curse, wherein the Nameless One gets yeeted
through. Yeah, the world. you had a really good idea where essentially the impact of Fenislil, the fourth moon sister, crashing into the Nameless One and the Yeva, the first city, caused a rupture through the entirety of the world of Siddhar out the back, and caused it to basically like rupture this massive, what we figured out was a canyon that had like basically two walls of mountains piled up that are these like northern and southern borders of this massive maw, and that the northern of the two is the southern border of Orun. So it basically splits that supercontinent in half on like a cataclysmic level. And as a result, there is this sort of like southern border to all of the lands of Orun. And we kind of played with the idea that that was where the corruption came from. I mean, I'm definitely drawing from Wheel of Time there, of like the idea that those northern lands, they start to get more like warmer after they should be getting colder, and they're like super corrupted and weird and shit. But like, yeah, the idea that kind of the corruption comes from there. What did we talk about after that? I know we talked about the forgetting.
Yeah, we
talked
after
you posited that idea.
We talked a little
bit.
Then
I talked about the forgetting.
How the forgetting is similar to Mistborn in that we have the. What was it? No, I think I'm getting too far ahead. I think that we've talked about forgetting. We talked about how the forgetting was caused by the.
Yes.
Feywild.
Potentially either the Wild Gods or an Elder Fey or something like that. And yes. The reason why was because the corruption was gaining a self-awareness of a kind. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we talked about how. So what did we say? Remember when I said that I wanted the forgetting to be caused by the Feywild, but for people to blame the corruption for it?
Yeah, there was basically a flip-flop between the Feywild and the Wild Gods and stuff. And then the corruption being like almost like a gifting of abilities or things. We had the druids who are actually chosen by the Wild Gods, and then we have people who basically seek out the druids. If you don't seek out the druids, if you aren't chosen by the Wild Gods, then the likelihood that you actually were, you know, chosen and given wild shape is super unlikely. It's far more likely that your powers came as an awakening from the corruption. And you have a quirk, and that means that you have essentially a distillation of a small like mote of corruption in you. And then that becomes something where if people do go to the corruption, the druids, I almost said the Jews. If you do go to the, not, there's no Freudian coding there. I think there's just a slip of the tongue. I don't even know what that coding would be. But yeah, if they do go to the druids, it is the druids who are basically keeping an eye on them if they actually accept them. And it's sort of like a black spot because they're not being chosen by the gods, but only like archdruids and people at very high levels actually know what's going on, which is that the corruption has sort of stained them.
I mean, the Israelites were the chosen people of God, so.
I guess, okay, yeah, all right, we can do that, sure.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
And then we discussed your weird. It was the last thing we did, the weird idea about the gods not being able to read.
Oh, yeah. Well, we definitely talked about other stuff in there. I know one of the things was like that. Yeah. So if the Wild Gods were responsible for it, and there's this like flip flop of like.
Oh, yeah. The waves.
Right. Yes. The idea of, well, the fairies. I mean, we got to talk about the fairies, too.
Yeah, the pixies that run around and give people their forgetting juice.
Well, this is one of the best ideas of that last episode that I think is so valuable to work with, is that the forgetting is not a thing that is... It is actually the wild gods who are causing the forgetting, because it is removing memories,
yeah,
or like parts of the cognitive self.
Yeah, let's say cognitive content.
Yeah, cognitive, sure, we'll go with that. Cognitive content that has been corrupted. So when a person's mind, like if they get a piece of it wiped, it's because the corruption has seeded in there. And as I talked about, kind of with like the idea of wave physics or whatever, these unequal waves that pass over different parts of the world or different people expunge different bits of the corruption from their minds. Or it also could be pixies, which I actually do like that idea quite a bit. It's like some sort of weird magical creature that flits around and was sent by the wild gods. It's like a memory fairy or something that removes bad memories from your mind, which is so silly, but also very good. Yeah. And then the final idea that I had previously, you know, brought up to you, and then we were kind of playing with that and seeing where that led.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was essentially, what if the gods couldn't read?
Yeah, which would apply to all of the gods, including the regents. And the wild gods.
Mm-hmm.
And would this also apply to the mutes?
Yes, I think so. Unless they went out of their way to acquire the ability, but I don't actually know if they can. Like, I mean, legitimately, so I, just to reiterate my reasoning without going super deep here, essentially it was the idea that this is the reason why they couldn't read is the same reason why they can't read, like look into the minds of mortals, which we've never established before. I'm just kind of setting that as a, hey, what if gods also can't look into the minds of mortals? And the reasoning why was basically because they don't have access to the mental sphere of Skyris, because I don't know if they'd really need to, the contour realm, as we've talked about it before. And that language on paper or whatever is like scribbles, but in physicality, it has no meaning. It's only in the mind. The mind assigns meaning to language. And I guess kind of what I was thinking is like, I don't know if the gods really need to have minds, because, or if it also makes sense for them to have minds. Like, what is a mind? We can kind of get into that if you want. I mean, I would love to like kind of hear from a philosophical stance. Like, what is a mind? Should the gods have minds? I think you can, I don't know. I guess it's a little silly to talk about, because it's like they're still making decisions and things. But maybe part of what I was kind of thinking of was the idea that the mind of a god versus a mind of a mortal is so completely different. And maybe this has to do with that free will aspect, or the whole process of building up an entity a la the giants, that there is something so much more, what's the word? Not prosaic. I'm thinking of like prehistoric almost, you know, there's something almost prehistoric about the cognitive process of a god. And in a way that like distilling it down into a proper mind might be, I was air quotes, might be limiting the mind. Or something, like their cognitive process might be linked inextricably with the animus or something, in a way where they have almost unlimited access to thoughts and understanding and stuff, and as a result, their decision-making centers and the way that they see the world might be completely different than a mortal.
I don't know, it's tough, because when you take away the free will from them, There's an open question of whether they make decisions or not.
Yeah, so okay, let's talk about that too. You don't think that the gods, you think that the gods should have free will?
I think that if they don't, I would want to say they don't make decisions. In the same way your cat doesn't make decisions.
I would say that on the most esoteric level, I would say that's true. I don't think that the gods of the Ethereum make decisions.
But
I think that they
like
are...
They don't...
How can they?
Things. They don't choose from one course to another. They just act like an...
So, okay. This is good. This is good because I think I'm about to learn something about the way that we define decisions and things, a la like philosophy. But yeah, ultimately, so this is kind of, this was kind of my thought process. You can, if there's only one outcome that the chemistry of your brain would be capable of resolving, and the weighing of different things, and get a certain balance of this and certain balance of this and how you feel that day and your emotions, etc., whatever, all balance and provide with a certain answer. Is that still a decision, or was that a pre-manufactured outcome of just saying like, this is how this chemistry always was going to arise? Basically what I'm saying is like, if the gods are taking a bunch of things into account, and they're weighing and evaluating and making sense of things, but they have this extremely limited perspective through which they see the world by necessity, because they are basically the incarnate version of either an ideal or on the regents level, like one of the nine flow. Then how can they make a true decision? Because everything that they're doing is singularly defined by this one abstract, and it must follow this abstract, and that abstract is going to define everything that they do. So, I don't know, Ifzun is never going to make a decision that doesn't lead towards greater perfection, because that's all Ifzun ever is. She is the manifestation of perfection. So if it's the choice between doing two things, she's basically weighing, like, how does one be more perfect than another? It's always going to result in, I'm always going to do the thing that leads towards greater perfection. I guess that's kind of my pitch there, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I just think it's strange that they do this weighing if they're always going to act to promote a certain thing in a certain way.
Maybe they don't.
Yeah, you could maybe make the argument that they weigh this only to understand, for example, with the example of Ifzun, the only reason why they have the cognitive resources to weigh two courses of action is for them to figure out which course of action will result in more perfection. But because they're gods, I feel like that they just know that. Like, they know perfection to such an extent that
they don't have to weigh things out.
They don't weigh things. They just see it.
Yeah, that makes that makes more sense. I think I see what you're saying. Like, another example would be, I don't think it's Prispa. I can't remember which one is the god / goddess of wisdom. But like, wisdom is like, how do you apply knowledge? You know, you might not have infinite knowledge, but the knowledge that you do have, you apply in a moralistic way. They wouldn't have to weigh out decisions. They would just know the right way of doing things, especially if we're kind of playing with the idea that they have this perfect access to the abstract of wisdom and are basically the incarnate version of it. I just think that's so above
Prognan.
And beyond the... Thank you, Prognan. Were you looking at the gods list?
The god mill, yeah.
I appreciate that. But their cognitive processes are so far above and beyond the way that a mortal mind works that maybe there's no weighing of decisions to make. And so I guess that's basically my pitch, is like, then you don't really have need of free will. And especially because on a large scale, like all of this stuff that Own put together, I'm imagining it almost more like a clockmaker, where it's just like, these are the things necessary to make this world work, in the same way that we have gravity and, you know, the strong to weak nuclear force and electromagnetism, etc. Like, these are the laws of reality. And for Own, part of creating the laws of reality was to have... Own is a very much a person-focused, like creates characters, creates entities. to monitor and keep track of and look after the cosmic powers. And so you don't necessarily need somebody. Actually, I would say it might not even be, you don't want a gear to be able to say, well, maybe I don't want to turn this way, or I don't want to like operate in this sense. That doesn't change the fact that they're like basically nigh limitlessly powerful creatures, entities, but at the same time, they don't need free will. And as a matter of fact, free will might actually work against them in the processes and things. Because what if Ifzin decides not to reinforce, you know, perfection or allow that abstract to pass through the world or something like that? Or decides not to be perfect? That's like saying, like, oh yeah, gravity is just closed up shop for today. No more gravity for a little while until we feel like it.
So here's a question for you. Here's a question for you that's slightly more, you know, getting back to where we were, which is gods can't read minds, gods can't read books. What about a spell like Detect Thoughts? This is something that I think clerics get access to.
Mm-hmm.
And do they get access to it and are able to do it because they are present in Skyrus?
Yes, but again, I think that this only because they're mortals. Like, I think, I mean, honestly, it's like, I just look at it like this. Okay, I was born and raised as a Christian, right? So I have a fair knowledge of, this is just my knowledge base. There's plenty of things that the mortal Christian human does that God doesn't need to also be capable of doing. For instance, like, I don't know, God doesn't necessarily need to be able to, maybe he does, is able to read, I don't know, but he doesn't need to be able to, because he just has perfect knowledge.
Yes.
Or, I don't know, like some of the clerical rites, you know, things you think of like as a pastor or priest or something doing, you know, baptism. It's not like, maybe God is technically capable of doing that, but he doesn't really need to, because when is he ever going to be doing that? Or can angels baptize people? I don't know. I don't think so. But also, I don't know if they're literally even capable of doing it. That's a really weird, this is weird. But I guess I'm just saying, like, different roles. Like, you, not everybody needs to be able to do everything. Access to ability is not necessarily a true measure of real power, in my mind.
Also, interestingly enough, both Detect Thoughts and Modify Memory can only be cast by arcane spellcasters.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Are there other ones like that that are, I mean, what do clerics have access to ones that would access the brain?
I'm trying to figure it out. Let's see. Filter by cleric. Calm emotions, maybe?
Emotions are more associated with the soul.
Zone of truth, maybe?
I could see arguments being made for them not having access to Skyrus in the same way. But again, even if they did, I don't think that that would like disallow this approach. I don't know. Where are your thoughts right now? What's kind of in your mind about what I'm pitching here?
So before I looked this up, you were discussing, oh gosh, what was it? You were talking about how the Christian God has certain things, or doesn't do certain things, because why would they need to?
Yeah.
And so let me just quickly mention that our gods are very different from the Christian God in that they don't know everything. They don't not all powerful. So you could think that they may need to do some things that the Christian God wouldn't need to do. But also
potentially,
you for example, this was a big thing in the New Testament. I love how we're getting biblical now. Where Jesus
Carter's
would forgive,
been reading the Bible, which I think is so interesting.
Jesus would forgive people's sins, and then the other dudes who Jesus didn't like, the Pharisees, were like, only God can do that, and he's like, bitch, I'm God. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so
yeah,
there was some interesting stuff where like it would seem, and then now we have Catholic priests that do that, or at least they seem to.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into Catholic.
Yeah, we don't need to Catholic doctrine. Let's not do that.
Mostly because I like, I'm not against it or anything. It's just, it's a very different doctrine than what I grew up with. And
it's very interesting.
It's, yeah, like the idea that a mortal can forgive sins who isn't God. I don't know. Anyways, I'm not going to get into that one.
Yeah, I mean, they would probably say they don't do it. So,
well, okay. So let me just pitch. Let me just put this from a different angle here, which is, I think this makes for better world building. Ultimately, that's why I'm saying this, is because I think that the idea that gods can't read is such a cool idea. There's so many opportunities to do creative shit with that. Of, you know, stories, especially because this is probably closely guarded information that, you know, they don't like mortals knowing. And if a mortal discovers it, they probably would, they would maybe try and kill him. I mean, honestly, like, I don't know, because that is sort of like a quote unquote greater good reason that they would be like, yeah, we, you know, we can't let anybody actually know this for real.
I see.
I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of opportunities that we can use that. But good news to you, Carter. I don't know if that's actually necessarily required for the larger picture of stuff that we're discussing today. So we can leave that one for now. Maybe one day I'll convince you.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I think ultimately it's just, I want to find harmony. I want to find a version of this where we're both like, oh, that's so fucking cool. I'm down with this. You know, Carter's down with this, etc. But until then, I know that what we were talking about with the, oh man, I mean, we had so many different pieces. I don't know the best way to proceed. So here's where I'm going to go with this is something that I've kind of been thinking about and been trying to decide where I'm at with, which is, what is the corruption? I've been thinking about this. Is it a scar of the Nameless One? Okay, maybe, but what is it? Like, what is that scar? I feel like we are, a couple episodes ago, I talked about the Curse of Flesh as it relates to World of Warcraft, and I don't want to entirely ape that because I feel like that's kind of, I don't know, cheap and also not very creative if we're just taking that whole cloth, because it's such an interesting idea. But I think there's a version of that, which, just to recap everyone, is essentially the idea that free will or choice was a flaw given to the mortal creatures of, well, not even, they were almost immortal, like, whatever. The creatures, the automaton-esque creatures of World of Warcraft. So, for instance...
Wow.
What?
I was just saying wow as both a...
Testament
to World of Warcraft, but also because the idea is dumb.
Uh-huh. Oh, you don't like that idea?
Nah.
Well, I mean, okay, so here was basically, I mean, the pitch of it was essentially that everything of World of Warcraft in that world was, there was a certain way that the Titans want everything to happen, and they had their, I don't know, their followers underneath them, and they had followers underneath them, and all of that stuff was, you know, sort of managing and making the cosmos work in a certain way. And then, and so everything was predetermined. Everything was like, yeah, automatic. And then the Curse of Flesh happened. And so, for instance, there was the Mechanomes, which were literally like, I think, like gnome robots. And they, over time, don't really know how that works, but they over time, like, literally took on flesh and like the old ones, like C'Thun and stuff. And that actually gave them free will. Now, I don't think we do that because we have our own mythology here that I think is more interesting, which is that, you know, free will was developed for the mortal. And it was in the process of, like, you know, the giants and stuff that was the testing grounds. However, I am seeing a connection between the corruption, between quirks, and this personness that it has. It has like, it seems like it almost has a character, like you were kind of imagining, like thousands of voices and stuff. That sounds like it has a nature, an impulse, a drive. It has like a movement that connects it to specifically the mortal.
Right, maybe
it does connect to other stuff.
I want to lay bare I want to lay bare what I have, all of my thoughts on the corruption, what it is, and tell you. And you tell me what, if you don't like it, if you want to change some stuff, if you want to accept it all wholesale. You ready? First, we're going to start with the Lord of the Rings, as we always do.
Oh boy, have you ever heard of
the term Morgoth's Ring?
I mean, is that the One Ring?
No, so that would be Sauron's Ring.
Okay, so Morgoth, don't tell me, Morgoth is Sauron's boss, basically. Yes. Like Sauron
the
is
the first Dark Lord,
the big Eye Man, the big scary Eye Man, or at least how he's interpreted in the movies.
Yes,
is literally just a. Like the right hand man of essentially the devil, and the Morgoth is like the devil, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Hopeful angel.
And Morgoth had a ring.
So this is the idea. So Sauron's ring, obviously the famous One Ring. He put a great deal of his own power into it, and that that investiture made it to where, so long as the ring lasted, he would survive, and the ring would enhance his.
Wow, own power. I missed that. I totally missed that. I didn't realize that was the connection. That's why they had to destroy their One Ring. I just thought that was because it was bad.
No. It's because so long as... Yeah. Okay, so... So basically what I'm trying to say is Harry Potter stole that idea from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, like the Horcrux?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
That's
straight Book 7 up, spoilers.
That's straight up just Sauron. But in any case...
Okay.
Morgoth's ring,
but then turned it into a fetch quest.
Yeah,
Morgoth's, for like the 7 Horcruxes or whatever.
Morgoth's ring isn't a ring. Morgoth's ring was the world of Arda. He invested a great deal of his own power into things in the world. He made dragons. He made orcs. He made, in some sense, Balrogs, I guess.
Wait, dragons are straight up evil in Lord of the Rings?
Dragons are straight up evil.
Ah, shucks. That sucks. Oh, well. Anyways. Okay, but yeah, so he made these different creatures. And are you saying, for a second there, I thought you were saying Arda literally was a ring world. I was like, fuck?
No.
No. That changes everything.
It's an analogy, Frank. All right, so... So what I'm trying to say here is that something the similar is going on. I think that there was originally a Dusk that was created... somehow through contact with the Nameless One, and they, instead of like a lot of other people, instead of gathering power in themselves and using it to wreak havoc, they invested their power into other things, and this led to the corruption. Eventually, they invested so much power into other things that they lost their own form and are thus only like a driving force in the minds of corrupted beings. And so they... have made a rune into their ring. And so long as the corruption survives, they will survive. And they're this weird, malevolent soul thing, spirit thing.
What are the thousands of voices then?
All of the... So basically it just stitches everything together. All of
okay.
The, all
of the souls, Annihilation style.
Yeah. All okay. of the souls, like the souls of the people are in...
Okay.
Are in the Dusk now. And in turn, in every single corrupted thing.
I don't hate this idea. I think there's a lot to pull from here. I think my one hesitation is Dusk seems rather minor, which is maybe silly. I think I guess I've just never really... We haven't really done anything with the Dusks in a long time. And the last time we did something with them was like a microscope where eventually the Dusk was killed by something or somebody.
No,
or something.
No, I don't think the dusk did not die. The Solar died and turned into a Dusk.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
But don't forget, the Solars are the most powerful of all angels, which is powerful than a lot of gods. More powerful than a lot of gods. Minor gods.
Yeah.
And Dusks are the, opposite of that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I mean, I think we can do some stuff with that. Okay, so here's where my mind is at. Actually, first, go ahead and finish if there was any other thoughts that you had about that.
No, that's
it. If you wanted to seed that. Okay. So here are my thoughts. I think, first of all, I really like the idea of a creature or an entity, a force living on through things existing, which actually is kind of what happens in Mistborn too. Like, we have it's not ruin, it's preservation. Their trade-off, the way that they sort of like kind of tricked ruin into making this deal where they would be able to do creation and stuff, is by allowing for preservation's presence to be in creatures, like the will to continue and to persevere and to become more than they were. And I think that that's a really cool play, and it's cool that we're sort of subverting that and then taking that. I mean, who, you know, chicken or egg situation here, obviously, because it's like Lord of the Rings did it first, technically, and flipped it around, and we're doing a similar thing, you know, and then maybe, I don't know if Branderson took that idea and ran with it, was like, well, what if we flipped it around? I don't know, whatever, doesn't really matter. I really like that idea. That as so long as the creature survive, the dusk survives, or whoever this creature is. I think the one thing that I really like about Mistborn is that it takes these extremely high level, we're talking about literally the gods of that reality, and makes it so that their battles, their successes and victories and failures and things are impinged dependent on how mortals behave and how they act and stuff. And I think the one thing that I feel like is missing from this picture is that the corruption seems so much greater than just a dusk doing a thing. I mean, we already kind of tied it in, you as your ideas were sort of being put forward, as, you know, being directly tied to the Ash Curse and this being a manifestation of the Ash Curse and the corruption. And now, if that was a dusk that got corrupted, it was in the center of that blast for some reason, or was a solar that became a dusk as a result of that, something like that, I think that that's cool, and we can do something with that. But I still feel like there's something almost on a metaphysical level that the corruption is representing about our ability to make choices. Coming back to that free will aspect, so much of Orun is about this core nature of free will. It's built into the bedrock of its identity. And I think if we're not playing with that, with the corruption, then we're missing a huge opportunity to tell this allegorical story on like a higher level. I think it certainly could involve a dusk. I'm totally down with that. I just want to know how it relates to this larger picture of free will. Like, did free will get corrupted? Is that what the corruption is? Is the corruption the process by which, like, the dark side of free will, or the shadow of free will? Maybe it's not related to any of that. You know, we do have other things that we can play with. I definitely think, you know, the elements are in play here too.
I'd like to do the free... I'm perfectly happy with corrupting free will and making it to where people that have been corrupted no longer have free will. Because I wanted to also pull on this. Have you ever heard of the idea of swarm intelligence?
I mean, yeah. As far as what I think that term might mean in sci-fi and stuff, sure, like a hive mind creature.
It's a little bit less than a hive mind creature. Let me just read out the definition for you. Swarm intelligence is the collective behavior of decentralized, self-organized systems, natural or artificial. The concept is employed in work on artificial intelligence. It's typically a population of simple agents interacting locally with one another in their environment. The inspiration often comes from nature, where especially biological systems where agents follow very simple rules, and although there is no centralized control structure dictating how individual agents should behave, local and to a certain degree random interactions between some such agents leads to the emergence of intelligent global behavior unknown to the individual agents.
The individuals within the swarm do not have quote unquote intelligence, but it is that the creature, the species itself, evolved by having swarm intelligence, where all things working together provide a semblance of order that can allow them to accomplish goals or tasks, though no one individual is necessarily aware of that greater goal.
Yeah, so this is what I kind of want to push with the corruption, is that it is so much greater than what it began as. That there is no central intelligence behind it. It's just... it is this swarm intelligence where each individual actor doing its individual job leads to this emergent intelligent behavior.
I really like that. Also, I'm going to say I don't think it's conscious.
Yes.
Because I think that's one of the things that's cool about swarm intelligence is the fact that, like, an ant... Are ants, like, considered part of swarm intelligence? Because it's not like the queen has the master plan in her brain. She's just also part of that. She just has a very, very specific role to play for the nest.
The queen is not actually the regent. The queen just fucks.
Right. I mean, she just plays a very specific role. The drones in an ant farm, ant hive, ant hill.
Ant colony.
The ant hill's the ant colony. Jesus Christ. Thank you.
Yeah, they're colonial.
They're literally just sacks of DNA. Like, their whole thing is they're just meant to be the library for that ant colony. So then when other queens go on their, like, maiden voyage, the drones then pick up those pheromones from a long distance away. At least I know this is how it works for bees. I don't know if it's exactly the same for ants. You know, and then basically they inseminate so that you create, like... Anyways,
the ants
workers
and
are the daughters of the... But yeah, the whole point is it's swarm intelligence. It's creating more ants and more success for ants by having something where, like, no ant is conscious of what they're really doing on a larger scale, at least as far as science is aware of at this point. But it all produces success for the colony. Now, I basically just reiterated everything you already said. Yep. But anyways, the thing is I think that that's really cool. And I think maybe we can... play with that as being this antagonistic force to consciousness, where the person who gets, because we already know that the corruption doesn't just corrupt people, you know, it corrupts the natural world, it corrupts trees, it corrupts birds and things, you know, it turns them into these weird reptilian monsters, or at least, you know, did a long time ago and maybe continues to do so. And all of that is it just growth? Is that all that the corruption is trying to do? Or could we plug it with a greater goal that is, like, almost left in its unconscious? Like, what if it's something like this, where we can almost do sort of like an unfinished business thing with a Dusk, where maybe they were conscious of the fact that they would become this unconscious swarm if they ceded their will, but they had a very specific thing that they were trying to do, like a goal of, like, bringing down the gods or taking over the land or... you know,
so when we were
bringing the nameless one back or something like that.
When we originally talked about the corruption, it had one goal and that was to destroy.
Okay. That's right. We did. That was actually one of the things that was compelling about it, was that it was a terrifying force that had no greater goal than to just destroy. I mean, it, you know, in that way, like a personification of ruin before I realized that ruin was ruin.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it doesn't have some elegant plan. It's not, you're right, I do like that better. It doesn't have like a greater goal structure or something that it's trying to accomplish. It just wants to break down and destroy. Even to the point where it may destroy itself ultimately.
Oh yeah, I think that's the end goal, is self-destruction once all else is destroyed.
It's just nihilism. Like, it's just like complete nihilistic power.
Yeah, is it? You're playing around with philosophical terms here, Frank.
Well, nihilism is like nothing means anything and it's self-destructive, right?
I don't know if it's necessarily self-destructive. I thought nihilism was
okay.
There is no purpose.
Right. Yeah, I know you might be right. Nihilism might be more than what... It gets reduced a lot in conversations and things, at least like cognizantly. When I think about nihilism, or when I think of having a nihilistic approach, it is oftentimes self-destructive. But in truth, it's like not actually that. It's just it's purposeless, that there's nothing meaning. And, you know, self-destructiveness can arise out of that, but that they're not necessarily one and the same. Is that named after somebody, like some Nils or something? N-I-H-L-S? I could see like a Finnish guy with a, you know, Sebastian Nils or something, and then nihilism is his philosophic train of thought.
I don't know history. It looks like it's been around since Hegesias of Cyrene.
Okay,
which was 290 BC.
I'm assuming it didn't get coined as that though, because then we'd be calling it like Hegelism or something.
Yeah, I don't know where the term comes from, but I can tell you that There are different forms of nihilism. One of them is existential nihilism, which is life has no intrinsic meaning or value.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also moral nihilism and epistemological nihilism and metaphysical nihilism.
All right. Yeah. Russian nihilism. I don't. Russian, that's its own thing.
Okay, it comes from Latin nihil, which is nothing, and English ism.
Okay.
Gotcha. Nothingism.
All right, well, let's... Here's the thing. I think we kind of reached the end of this episode, unfortunately. I don't know if we necessarily have any real resolutions or like further, but I do feel like the picture is getting painted out that little bit much more. Because I think this helps us understand what the corruption is, and I don't know. The swarm intelligence, I think, makes a lot of sense. I think we should explore how that interacts with quirks and stuff next, but I think we might just have to do a two-parter or something.
I think we're gonna.
Depends on how you're feeling, too.
Yeah, I think we have to, because we're already at the hour mark.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, should we... I don't know, do you have a one-in-one that you want to do?
I think I'll say this. This will be my one. I have not read a lot of philosophical literature about nihilism, so it's possible that many of the things that Frank and I have just said about nihilism are wrong. So that's, as a philosopher, I have to be careful about this, because people like to make a lot of philosophical claims. I'm not claiming anything about nihilism. I'm simply attempting to understand it for the purpose of explaining to Frank what it might be. That's my one.
And that's what I appreciate about you, Carter. What I appreciate about myself is my bullheaded willingness to misuse and reappropriate philosophical terms for my own gain. I don't know. I mean, as far as it's, this is such a tricky one, because we are trying to give things definition that are kind of on the edge of liminal thought. Like there's a lot of stuff here about swarm intelligence and the idea of like the way that the corruption works. And I feel like I'm kind of grasping at clouds and getting a little bit more into a bottle each time. But I think we will get there.
All so right.
I don't really have anything specific to contribute for my one today. Well, but we will continue this in a part two. We will definitely continue this conversation until it, or I guess part three. I mean, really, because this is basically already part two. But yeah.
We hope you've enjoyed this exploration to the lands of Oberon and the realms beyond. If you enjoyed listening, you can give the Lorekeepers a 5-star rating on iTunes or other podcast avenues. You can also tell other people about us. If you're not in the U.S., you can probably just tell anyone you know, because everyone else is fine.
I forget about that. I forget that, like, the rest of the world isn't necessarily spending the year inside. Yeah, you know, they're, like, going to concerts and having coffee and shit.
Yep.
That'd be nice.
If you're in the U.S., call your doctor. Tell him.
Yep.
Tell him
yep.
about us.
Or her.
Or her.
Or they.
Yep, or
they them. No, it's them, not just tell they about us.
Tell they about.
Just because it, just because it's the end of the show doesn't mean that the world building stops. You can check out the subreddit, the perfect place to find resources, ask questions, and make your mark. Heart of the discourse. A lot of people have been bringing up questions about like what we're gonna do next, and there's definitely some really good ideas in there. So you can check those out. You can also reach us at the Lorekeepers on Twitter, on email, or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com.
Finally, thanks to Josh Silver for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lorekeepers theme, and thanks to you for listening.
Until next time, don't forget, there are always more swarms to intelligence.
Clouds to bottle.
Clouds to bottle is so much better. God damn it. Okay, bye everyone.
Bye.